I got a whistle in my bag if you guys need it.
38!
And that's the end of tonight's match. Final score, Kitsap Pumas 3, Public FC 1.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 343 Podcast. My name is John Pronich and I am your host. And today's episode is going to be a recorded conversation that took place on June 1st, 2016, just ahead of the third round Open Cup game between Kitsap Pumas and Sac Republic. The conversation that takes place is between owner of Kitsap Pumas, Robin Waite, and assistant coach, Leviu Bird, and myself. And the conversation takes place, actually, in the team's hotel lobby about 4 hours prior to kickoff of their match between them and Sac Republic. And the reason why I say that is because I kind of feel obligated to tell you that this isn't really a recap of the game itself. Now, the game itself was amazing. Leviu actually invited me to come up and take part in the day's activities, so that's why I was there at the team's hotel. I sat in their pregame meeting. I was with them during their pregame meal. I rode with them to the stadium, was in the locker room with them. I got to act as a ball boy on the sideline, which was kind of fun, but basically I got to sit with the coaching staff during the game, was with the team after the game as they celebrated their 3-1 victory over Sac Republic. And just to put it into a little bit of perspective for everybody, Kitsap Pumas is a fourth division team, if you make believe that U.S. soccer has a pyramid. And Sac Republic is a second division team that plays in the USL. So for a fourth division team to beat a second division team in this fashion, it was a big deal, and it was very fun to take part in the celebrations and be part of the experience on the field, off the field, and then to sit with the coaching staff the next morning over coffee and just discuss everything that happened. And it was a great experience. The reward for Kitsap Pumas for beating Sac Republic is now to play Seattle Sounders in the next round of Open Cup. And these guys are not going into this game thinking that, oh my gosh, we're playing a Major League Soccer team, we are absolutely going to lose. No. You should hear the conversation. I wish you could have heard it, and I wish I could have recorded it or should have recorded it. These guys are going in super confident to this match against Seattle Sounders, as they should. But let's get back to today's episode. So Robin Waite, owner of Kitsap Pumas, gives great insight into how Kitsap started and where Kitsap is going in the future. He's an open book. He talks about solidarity payments, which I was kind of taken aback by that. He was an open book, like I said. So I think that you guys will learn a little bit about what's going on in the lower tiers of U.S. soccer, which I think is really cool. Leviu gives us a little bit of the daily schedule for the team on game day and gives us some great insight because he was also a player for Kitsap Pumas at one time and now is an assistant coach with them. So I think this is a great interview. I think it's well worth your time. Again, I must mention that I had a little bit of technical difficulties. I recently bought some new audio equipment for this podcast and it's helping, but I still need to figure out how to use it. So at about 10 minutes, you're going to hear this weird break in the conversation. It's just going to be I'll put in a sound effect or something. But that's when it's going to flip from the bad audio to the good audio. And I hope you guys can make it all the way through that because it's well worth your time, like I said. Okay, so with that, I hope you enjoy it. And I look forward to interacting with you guys about this episode on the interwebs. So please tweet this. And if you have questions, please reach out to me, reach out to Kitsap. Everything will be listed in the show notes. That way you guys can all connect. Okay. I'm done. Enjoy. Okay. We are back for another episode of the 343 Podcast. And today we are joined by founder and owner of Kitsap Pumas, and assistant coach and goalkeeper coach from Kitsap Pumas. Owner and founder is Robin Waite, and assistant coach and goalkeeper coach is my good friend Leave You Bird, who many of you have probably known from prior encounters with 343. But the Kitsap Pumas have traveled all the way down from Washington, and I'll get the exact location from these guys in just a second, but traveled down from Washington for the third round of the Open Cup to play against Sac Republic down here in Northern California, Sacramento to be exact. It's a very historic competition. I'm sure that Robin and Leave You can give you the history of Kitsap Pumas' involvement in the competition, but many of you have probably been familiar with this historic U.S. competition for many, many years. But we'll start by getting to know these two fine fellas here. I guess we'll start with Robin. Robin, can you introduce yourself and maybe just talk a little bit about your involvement with Pumas and yeah, we'll start there.
Yeah, I got involved with the Pumas because I was originally a minority owner with the Seattle Sounders when they were in the A-League. And when they elected to go MLS, they decided, okay, we don't need this franchise anymore. And so I had the option of taking it over, which I did. So this was back in 2009. And so we started up the team in 2009, and we had sort of rights whereby we could pay our players a modest amount. At that time, I think there were something like five teams in the PDL who had franchises that allowed that opportunity. So we came over here in 2009. We went at it and put the team together. It was kind of amusing because our first tryout was up at North Kitsap High School, and we had something like 90 people try out. The amusing thing was that half of them knew they had absolutely no chance, but they wanted to be in on the first tryout. And so, Levi, you're raising your hand. That was part of it. There was one guy who damn near killed himself tripping over a ball. So, needless to say, he did not make the final cut. So we had a whole bunch of people. We put together a pretty good team that first year. We did. Nobody knew who we were or what we were, and so it was kind of an interesting arrangement. The team turned out to be rather good. It was coached by John Wedge, and Andrew Chapman was an assistant coach, and I'm not sure it was
James
was there as well. Yeah, so we had the three of them, and really put together a good team. I mean, we had our back line was very strong, and then we had a good midfield and a couple of pretty good strikers. So we wound up winning the league and then going, making it into the Western Conference Finals. Wound up playing down, having a trip down to Laredo, Texas in the middle of summer, which is kind of like Sacramento is today. It was about 95 degrees. And we played Ventura was our first game and wound up losing to them. 1-0. I think it was 1-0. I think it was a 2-1. I don't remember which.
Anyway, by one goal, in any case.
It was off a free kick on a dodgy penalty free kick, and the guy just put it in the net, and that was the end of the game. It must have been 1-0. I guess
must have been. Yeah.
So that was that. The unfortunate thing was that was our first game, so we had to stay 2 extra days in Laredo. If you can imagine, Laredo is kind of an interesting town, not to live in, and certainly just to pass through very quickly. So that's what we did. So we did. That was year one. Year two, brought in Pete Fewing to be our head coach. He was at that point. He was at Loose Ends, had been coaching at Seattle University, and had a pretty good job. It took him probably that first year to figure out that playing in the PDL was not quite like playing at Division II soccer in college. But year two, he put together, with some help from everybody, a very, very good team. And we wound up taking a couple of players from, I think, the Wolves when they sort of disbanded and then moved over into Redmond. So we had a great back line again and good midfield and won the league, won the Western Conference final game in Fresno. Again, it was a place where it gets rather warm in the summertime. We can't seem to get away from that. But so we beat them, and then we were elected to host the final and had that, again, this is 2011, hosted the final and won the darn thing, and just a great group of guys, and a lot of them went on to play at higher levels. One or two of them wound up playing for the Sounders, I think Brian Meredith in particular. I can't remember anybody else.
But a couple other guys who ended up going various places from that team. Brian obviously was the big name because he started for the Sounders next year in goal, but a couple guys ended up in NASL, a couple in the USL. I think that was really the first year where we started moving players on at a decent clip to the higher level teams.
Real quick, I wanna backtrack and actually introduce Levy. So that was Levy Bird that you just heard for the first time. And I wanna go back to something that you mentioned, Robin, about the first couple tryouts and when you guys had to make some unfortunate cuts, and Levy had raised his hand. Levy actually did make the team at one point, so we'll get to that and his playing history with Kitsap Pumas. But I want to back up and maybe get a little bit more history about or paint the picture for people. What is Kitsap? What does that mean? Where is that? I'm sure people are wondering what the area is like. So who? Okay, Levy.
Yeah, so Kitsap County is the location of the team. It's on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington, just across the water from Seattle. So if you take a ferry from downtown Seattle heading west, you go to either Bainbridge or Bremerton, and that's in Kitsap County. So it stretches a good portion of the peninsula from down near Gig Harbor, so Port Orchard, that kind of area, up through Kingston, if you're looking at a map. I'm sure people are pulling out their phones right now. But, you know, it's a good chunk of space, and I think, you know, one of the things we try to do is we try to involve the whole community, the whole county. Our appearances and our kind of community efforts stretch the entire length of the county. So I think it was a really smart choice not to brand ourselves as, you know, the Bremerton Pumas or the Paulsbo Pumas, although that would be kind of cool, anything like that, and just say Kitsap, you know, really trying to be something that the entire county can get behind. The players out there can look up to our players, hopefully, as role models and that kind of thing. So that's where the name of the club comes from. Yeah, that first tryout, I remember it. I was in college. I was just after my freshman year of college, and I went out, just like Robin said. I mean, I knew that they were going to pay players. I knew that I didn't really want to give up my college eligibility, so I didn't necessarily want to make the team, but I figured, hey, this will be cool. It's a chance to train in the off season a little bit, maybe get some decent competition. Same boat for me. Nobody had heard of me. Nobody knew who I was, and I went in, you know, as the goalkeeper, and we went into our off on our own, just like goalkeepers do, and we were doing our exercises, and James Ritchie, who was the goalkeeper coach at the time, kind of pulled me aside, and he goes, essentially, he asked me, "Who the hell are you?" You know, so that was kind of my first experience with the team, and from there, I trained with the team that first year. So I was around in year one, just as a training player, and it was a great experience for me.
Maybe if you guys could describe what the league is like. So we kind of got the rundown of what the competition is like and where it can take you, Laredo, Texas, Fresno, California, and we're talking about the PDL league. So talk about the makeup of the league, what the home schedule or the away schedule requires of Kitsap Pumas, and the type of energy and dedication it takes for the players and the coaching staff and everybody involved in the entire operation. Maybe talk a little bit about that side of things.
Okay. The we belong to the Western Conference Northwest Division, And I would say arguably that's the strongest division within the entire PDL league. There's approximately 70 teams in the PDL. There are seven teams in the Northwest Conference, which is part of the Northwest Conference, which is part of the Northwest Division. We managed to play six other teams. We play this year. We're going to be playing a couple of teams twice, or three times rather, and one of those is a miserable trip up to Calgary, where we have to go up on a play on a Friday and then play a second game on a Sunday, which puts a kind of a stress on the team, because first and foremost, we have the issues of getting people across the border, which is not that easy. It's much, much easier if you've got a team down in Southern California, for instance, because the number of teams that you have down there. Our league consists of, it used to be Vancouver and a couple of, Victoria was part of that, and then Abbotsville was also. So Victoria dropped out for 1 year. Vancouver gave up altogether, and Abbotsford ultimately caved in too. So now it's down to Lane United, you've got Tacoma, you've got Redmond with the Crossfire Group, and then us. And so it's very, very competitive. And I think out of the last 6 years, we've either had a team out of our league who's won it, or come in second, or placed in the final four. So from that standpoint, it is a competitive league.
Historically, how have teams from this Northwest division of PDL or Western Conference division of PDL, historically, how have these teams performed in Open Cup?
We've been in it three times. I think for the most part, we've done quite well. The our best response was 2011, when we wound up playing the Sounders team in, I think it was round four, but I'm not positive on that. Was it three? Okay. And we've always managed to get, in order to qualify for the Open Cup, you have to either come in first or second in your division, which when we've been in the league, or in the playoff, we've done okay. First time through, we played Portland's A-League team, and they wound up beating us 3-0. The one that that was back in 2009, I guess it was. 2011, we were in round three, played the Sounders straight up for the first 90 minutes almost, and wound up losing 2-1. Could have felt like we got kind of jobbed on a couple of calls, but that's always the case when you lose. Other than that, I'm just trying to think, we haven't, this is our, yes, yeah, to Cal FC was the team that went all the way through and wound up beating Portland, the MLS team down in Portland, and then got squashed because everybody took them a little more seriously by the Sounders beat them. So other than that, we really haven't been in it other than this year. We had one year where we didn't do quite so well, and so we didn't get into it. This year, we beat the Sounders in U23 team in a very, very difficult game, and felt quite relieved to get through. And then our reward was a trip down to Sacramento, which is where we're at now. So from that standpoint, we like our chances.
When we talk about getting to round three or round four of Open Cup, let's, I guess, backtrack a little bit too and talk about rounds one and two. What does round one and round two look like in Open Cup for a team like Kitsap Pumas?
Well, typically, open division teams, a.k.a. amateur teams, PDL, NPSL, USASA, basically men's league teams that qualify through their regional tournaments, will start in rounds one and two. And so usually those first couple of rounds are you know how cup football is. It's always a hard-fought game. Those first couple of rounds are guys who are very scrappy players, maybe not necessarily the most skilled, so it's always a hard-fought battle. For us, we usually start in the first round. This year, we got a bye in the first round because Rio Grande Valley dropped out at the last minute because they're affiliated with the Houston Dynamo, and they figured, well, if none of the other USL teams that are tied with MLS teams, aka Sounders 2, Timbers 2, Galaxy 2, if they're not allowed to play, then neither should we. And so they dropped out, and so we got a bye into the second round as the top PDL qualifier because we had the best regular season record of any PDL qualifier. And Chattanooga FC also got a bye into the second round.
Now, this is kind of news to me that the USL or the second division teams of MLS sides that obviously they kind of they come in round four, round five of Open Cup, so at a later stage, so their B teams essentially can't be in the tournament as well. But you guys said that you played the Sounders U23 team, so maybe explain that little piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, so, you know, in other countries, typically, you're thinking of Spain and Germany, the like Barca B, for instance, is not in Copa del Rey because they're tied with Barcelona. Sounders 2, same thing, right? Not in the U.S. Open Cup because they're tied closely. I mean, they're owned by the same people as the Sounders. They train, they share players, all that stuff. So they're not in the Open Cup either. Sounders U23 is a separate organization that is... it's an amateur team, college players. They're owned by different people, not the same as the Sounders. It's basically a handshake agreement that allows them to use the logo, the jerseys, that sort of thing. So they're kind of exempt from this because it's an amateur team. Timbers U23s are in the Open Cup. They are tied with the Portland MLS team, but because they're an amateur team, same thing, right? They don't have any professional players. It's all college players. They're also allowed to participate in the competition. I think that's pretty much it for the Northwest Division. Thinking there's other MLS PDL teams. I don't know if they are or aren't in it, but that's it for the Northwest Division.
And when MLS's B team, essentially, or their USL team or an affiliate team is not in the tournament, we'll say like LA Galaxy 2 or Sounders 2, Portland 2, those players then become eligible to play for their first team. So if somebody was registered to Los Dos from LA, and they can now move up and play with the MLS team in US Open Cup. Is that something that happens quite often?
Well, you get some interesting situations. Right? Like Sacramento, who we're playing today, for instance, we got their official roster yesterday, and neither of their players who are on loan from the Earthquakes, aka Tommy Thompson, Adam John, neither of them are on their official roster, so they can't play in the Open Cup. So I would imagine it's the same sort of thing for most MLS teams. They'll take a look at, you know, their USL guys who, in the early rounds especially, if they're playing against amateur teams or lower league teams, maybe they'll give those guys a look instead of playing their first team regulars. So, I'm not sure exactly how the registration works in terms of every single player, but, for Sacramento, for instance, when we were scouting them, we looked at it and we said, well, Tommy Thompson's probably not going to play against us. Adam John's probably not going to play against us, which honestly is a relief because Tommy Thompson especially is a fantastic player. So I think it just kind of depends on the specific regulations case-by-case basis. But it seems like, you know, if the Sounders wanted to use some S2 players, for instance, they could easily register them and use them in the Open Cup now that their B team isn't in the Open Cup.
And just from sitting here in the hotel lobby, you guys have some food and drinks out for the players, and they've been kind of coming down and picking up snacks as needed. And I think you guys are getting ready, and we'll talk about this in a second, but getting ready to do a team meeting and a video session before the game. I mean, I haven't seen anybody over the age of, I think, 23, 24 years old. And when you mention something like Sounders U23, you automatically go to youth, and oh my gosh, they're playing boys. It's men against boys. But really, I feel like everybody's about the same age. Maybe talk a little bit about the makeup of the Kitsap Pumas roster and how you guys stack up to other teams like Sac Republic and S2 or Sounders U23.
Well, the PDL is first and foremost a development league, right? That's why it's called the Premier Development League. It's primarily focused on college players and college-age players. For us, since we pay our players, we don't have any current college players on our team from the U.S. because that would void their eligibility, and obviously we don't want to do that to anybody. So there's a rule in the PDL that on your active roster, you can have 8 players over the age of 23. The rest all have to be underage. So basically, PDL terminology, right? You have overage players and underage players. On our overall roster this year, we have 11 overage players. The oldest is, I think, 26. We have one who's 25, a couple 24, 23-year-olds. So, obviously still on the younger end of the spectrum. But for the PDL, I mean, we have a very experienced team. And thankfully, in the Open Cup, we can play as many overage players as we want to because it's not the same regulation. So we can play all 11 if we wanted to. But for league play, we're only allowed 8 on the active roster, and that creates some interesting, always some interesting logistics of, okay, we got to email the league and get this guy switched from our active roster to our inactive roster because he's overage and we can only have 8, but he's hurt or we want to put somebody else on there. So, I mean, often it just ends up being if you're an overage player and you're not in the starting 11, then you're not in the game day 18 at all because there's just no room. So it always creates some interesting dynamics, especially for us. Our model is a little bit different than a lot of these other teams. You know, Sounders under 23, they take that under 23 pretty literally, and they have very few overage players, mostly current college guys, maybe a couple who the first team are trying to keep tabs on, that sort of thing. So for us, we sign players who are over 23 a bit more regularly than other teams. So it's kind of where the difference in model comes in between Kitsap and other PDL clubs.
When you guys are signing players contracts, I'm assuming, and this is all legit, professional soccer, what do those contracts look like? And maybe, Robin, maybe this is a question for you as owner of the club. Are you trying to lock down players for a season at a time? 2 seasons, 3 seasons. What's the outlook for you when you're bringing on new players?
Well, ideally, you'd like to be able to sign a Lionel Messi at age 18 and move him on. We did have one player that signed for us who we signed on, Cameron Heppel. I don't know if you remember him or not, Libu, but he wound up playing for a team in Albania. And so we received, I think it was $5,000 for that. So that would be the ideal situation if we could do almost like a Toichi model, whereby they develop players and then they get sent on and then they retain a percentage of that contract as it goes through. Really, in our case, most of the players who come through to us are on the upper age, so they're going to be 23, somewhere in that range. And so in our country, we have a tendency to look at somebody who's 23 as not being developable, so that it's not like a baseball player who can come through and just take off when he's 25 or 26. The primary attitude on this is that if you get them when they're 18, 19, you can develop them, and then beyond that, it's too difficult. They're already done. So it does allow an opportunity for us to take these kids on.
For those of you that have followed Leviu in the past and his reporting, and you might remember him best from some of his work covering solidarity payments and U.S. Soccer's stance on that and the fight that's been happening specifically in Pacific Northwest with DeAndre Yedlin and other players. When you mentioned that a player moved on to Albania and a payment was received of $5,000, my first thought was, is this legal? And I'm super curious. So I don't know. Can you talk about that at all?
Well, I'm sure the I don't want to have the Albanians after me, but that That would be that would not be my first. I need Liam Neeson to kind of get me out of it. But it is legal. I mean, it's just you're just assigning the contract. As I say, the Tawichi people made a living doing that, and they kept their school going for years. There's a bunch of players who came up here and wound up playing for the Washington D.C. team, and I think ultimately a couple of them went on to play in Spain. I think it was Echeverry was one of them who did that. So, yeah, it's an avenue. If we got really good at it, if we could take players at age 16, 17, which is what the Sounders are trying to do, trying to develop these guys that so that they can go ahead and go up into MLS from the farm team, basically. If we could do the same thing over here and then sort of have a development factory, that would be great because then you wind up assigning or selling the contract, which is what we'd want to do.
Now, what is it like for kids at Pumas being in an area where you guys are kind of, I guess, near three MLS sides with one being in Canada and one being across the bay in Seattle? Is it a bay? Is it considered a bay? A sound. It's a sound. I'm sorry. I know that's a hot topic for you guys. Across the water and then Portland to the south. I'm sure that if you guys had your hands on a bright and upcoming star that they would somehow be after these players, would something like a solidarity payment or that $5,000 payment that was previously paid by an Albanian club, would that be something on the table if a club came knocking at Kitsap Puma's door, that if the club was in MLS?
Well, absolutely. And I think what we would love to do is follow the Iceland model. And, I mean, they develop players all over the place, and I think we could do the same thing here. If you look at the Kitsap County, our population is just about the same as Iceland, only the weather's a lot better. So, you know, you can develop players over here. It's just a matter of having the mentality that, yes, soccer is an avenue for young players. I mean, everybody has a dream today that they're going to play in the NBA or the NFL, and it just doesn't happen. And I think if a kid is 5'6", can run a 900 meter and weighs 150 pounds, there's no way he's going to wind up playing in the NFL as a cornerback. But he could play for a MLS team or even a European team if he's good enough. He has a technical ability. So what we have to do as a part of our youth program is to develop these kids and develop the technical ability. When I say technical, is their ability to be able to dribble, pass, shoot, all the things that are required of a first-class soccer player. So very, very, very reasonable chance of doing that. I mean, it's just getting these players in and out of American sports into the soccer realm.
Does Kitsap Pumas currently have a youth academy? And if so, what does that look like? And if not, are there plans to have one in the future?
We did have one. And it, with youth soccer being what it is in this country, it was just a battle with all the local teams, because they all felt that they could do a better job than we could. And so there was just constant strife over players. So we wound up abandoning that and then sort of merging with another local club in the what they call the RCL regional club. And so now we're fully embraced in that, and we've got a number of our players who coach for that team. So it's just a matter of time, and I think ultimately we'll be able to put together a strong program.
When you're looking at starting the youth academy and or youth club, you mentioned bringing kids up like a farm system and into the first team. And I guess as an owner and a member of PDL and a member of U.S. Soccer, is your goal for them to end at Kitsap Puma's first team? Or is your goal to move them into Major League Soccer? Is your goal to move them to Europe or South America or somewhere else? What would be the eventual goal for a player that comes all the way through your Kitsap youth program into your first team? Then what?
Well, I think ultimately for us, the best event out of that would be for the bring a player up and have him wind up in Europe, because then we get a residual from that. Everybody says, okay, well, gosh, if they can develop over in Kitsap, we want to go play in Kitsap. And so it would enhance our program tremendously in order to be able to do that.
Does Kitsap Pumas have any interest in moving into Major League Soccer or becoming part of that organization? Or what's the eventual goal for Kitsap Pumas too?
Well, I think it'd be more, obviously it takes more money to run an MLS program, and I'm not able to fund $100 million program for that. But I think ultimately what we would like to do is either probably get in the USL Pro. We have what's called bounce back rights because we were originally part of the old A League Sounders, and if we were to do that, I think it would be almost more fun to take a team in that and just kill everybody in USL Pro and not worry about MLS. Let them kill each other on that. Because ultimately what you would want to have is a promotion relegation in order to make the whole thing work properly. But I don't see it ever happening, because you'd have people jumping out of buildings in New York if they've spent $200 million on a franchise and then they get relegated down to playing in Kitsap. So that would not work very well. So I think our long-term goal is to get into USL Pro or a higher level than where we are and see what we can do in that, and just kind of it's more fun it'd be a big fish in a small pond.
So putting aside the knowledge that these other franchises have paid $100 million, $200 million, you believe in promotion relegation. You believe in the, excuse me, the fight to the top. And is that something that you have always believed in, or is it new? Because promotion relegation is definitely a hot topic at the moment in U.S. soccer. But is that something that you had on your mind when you got into this in 2009?
No, that was not part of the program. It was promotion relegation is quite unique throughout Europe and the rest of the world. It's a foreign concept to American sports. So I don't see, if that were the case, the Cleveland Indians would never have been in the American League all these years. I think Buffalo would have taken them over, and so I mean, who wants to go to Buffalo? So or Cleveland for that matter. So so that's one of the. One of the novelties of the promotion relegation, and I think you see pictures on TV of fans in clubs that have been relegated. It's like their heart was cut out, and then you have something like Leicester, who comes absolutely from nowhere. I think what was the 5,000-1 odds in order to win the championship, and they did that. And so they're on the moon right now. So I don't know. I don't think there's anything quite like it.
I 100% agree. I want to jump back to today's game or tonight's game. You had to remind me. It's June 1st. My watch has the wrong date. But it's June 1st. It's a Wednesday. It's in Northern California right now. It's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The team has been here since yesterday and doesn't leave until tomorrow about this time. I'm really curious what it's like for a lower division team that doesn't have the income or the influx of money from concessions and things like that. And this is something we'll maybe talk about in a little bit too. But you don't have the money like MLS does to send their teams all over the country or all over the continent, actually. What is it like for the PDL sides to get their teams from place to place? And maybe, Robin, you can tackle that question, and then leave you if you can talk about the specifics of what the day-to-day is, the schedule for the players and for the team and kickoff post-game. So we'll start with Robin about organizing this whole shebang.
I think what helps a great deal with this is that the USSF, who runs the Open Cup, has gotten a lot more sensible about it all, because a couple of years ago, I think Yakima wound up having to go play somebody over in on the East Coast, and it just about bankrupted the team. So now what they try and do is regionalize it as much as possible, so that we played a team from across the bay from us in the Sounders. They wound up playing a team up out of California, so you don't have the long trip. It's preparation, and it's just a matter of what we've done is we've kind of tailored our preparation for this game with the idea that it would be fantastic if we can beat Sacramento, and then wound up with a derby, as they call it, against the Sounders, the first team Sounders. So we did that a couple of years ago, as I mentioned earlier, and played them pretty much straight up. But it's you never know. When a team is, you know, things are, the soccer gods can be very cruel and they can be very kind. So you never know what's going to happen. And if we could do that, you know, the ultimate glory for us would be, okay, we win all our games from here on out and we get into the finals. And what that does is everybody, you know, knows who we are. And so we're able to get sponsors. We're able to get free meals throughout Kitsap, whatever it is that we can gin out of the whole thing. But it would be to make another couple of moves in the rounds would be very helpful for us financially.
So you're saying, I just want to make sure I have this right, advancing in the next couple of rounds would actually help you financially. So maybe explain a little bit about that.
USSF is very good at reimbursing for expenses, and so they wouldn't. Our games are played at Gordon Field, which holds about 2,000 people. So you wouldn't. You'd rather play at CenturyLink Field over in Seattle or wherever it is that the next round is required. Next round for us would be, if we win, we'll be at Starfire. You go beyond that, you know, I don't know where it would actually end up. So from a financial standpoint, it would enable us to get better recognition. We could probably get a better uniform deal with Admiral. We could probably get sponsors, people in Kitsap, to realize that, you know, hey, we've got a pretty good soccer team here. It's worth supporting. We could use a jersey sponsor. We could use any number of different types of sponsors, and that's where we have to get creative as to how we merchandise ourselves.
And just logistically speaking, I guess, how many players came from Washington down to Sacramento? How did you guys get here, and what does that look like for Kitsap?
Well, U.S. Soccer reimburses up to 22 people for a certain amount of money for Open Cup. So we brought 18 players and four coaches, the entire coaching staff, and then you know, game day, 18-man roster. You know, it's one game, so we could travel with 18 pretty comfortably. If it were two games, like when we go to Calgary later this season, still we can only dress 18. We're going to probably try to bring about 20 just in case there are injuries or whatever between games. And so, you know, we brought 18 players, four coaches. Robin came down as well, so the owner's here. We flew down yesterday morning, rented a couple of vans, and we're here at the Red Lion. This is where we're staying for the next couple of days. We fly out tomorrow. So we'll be here overnight again. The game's at 8:00. So, you know, it's not like we really want to jump on a 1 a.m. flight home anyway, if there is such a thing from Sacramento to Seattle. So we'll be here tomorrow. Flight takes off at about 2:30. We'll go home and then jump right back into it. We got a league game on the weekend. So on Saturday, we'll be taking the ferry up to Victoria, 90 minutes. And then we play Sunday, take the ferry back, drive back. You know, our day-to-day with our club and our motto, we try to make it as professional as possible. So we train full-time, just like you know, just like the Sounders do, just like the Timbers do. We train pretty much every day. Obviously, we give days off here and there as necessary. If we play on a Saturday and we haven't played since the previous Saturday, we might train Monday, Tuesday, give the players Wednesday off, train Thursday, Friday, and then play Saturday. So, the coaching staff is very committed. It takes a lot of commitment and some kind of special people to make this happen. And I really think that the group that we have here, you won't find a group of coaches who works harder. And obviously kind of blowing my own horn a little bit there, but Cammy, the head coach, he does, obviously, besides being the head coach, he does a lot of the social media, the graphics, sponsorship packages, that sort of thing. Sean Scobie, our assistant coach, he's in charge of our player appearances and our community events. I'm the goalkeeper coach. I also do a lot on the media side. I write our press releases. I kind of update the website, that sort of thing. Keith, aside from his full-time job as a detective, he's also our performance analyst. So he's in charge of the game film and breaking it down for us. And, basically everybody wears a lot of hats, and that's just kind of the way it has to be, including we're the drivers on away trips, right? We drive the vans, all that stuff. So we coordinate the meals. We work hard, and I don't think it's unfair to say that we probably work harder than we should when it comes to all this, because we want the players to have the most professional experience possible, and we want ourselves to be able to use this. And personally speaking, I can now on my resume I can say I did all this stuff for a PDL team, which is not a bad thing when you're trying to coach at a higher level. You can say, look, I have all this hands-on experience, and all four of us can now say that. So we try to run it as professionally as possible, full-time pretty much during the season, train every day, and it's difficult, but I think it's really rewarding for all of us involved to know that, yes, we work hard, but also you can see our fingerprints personally on everything that we do. So it's a good feeling.
And Levy, you kind of mentioned some of the other staff that's involved with Kitsap that's obviously down here for the game. We were hoping to get head coach Cammy on right now, but he had some cell phone trouble. He had to go to the Verizon store. And I'm hoping to maybe catch up with Cammy at some point and talk about a story that Levy, you kind of clued me in on. But there was a time during Cammy's playing career that he played for Scotland's U19 team, and his task for the day was to mark Busquets. So I think that'd be a really interesting story to hear Cammy talk about. He seemed pretty passionate about the fact that he just was inside the same lines as Busquets, not necessarily marking him. That'd be an interesting story to tell. So we're about, I think, 20 minutes away from the first, besides team breakfast this morning probably, but the first team event, which is going to be analysis of Sacramento's last game and going forward with the plans for tonight's game. So, Levy, you want to talk a little bit about what the rest of the afternoon entails for the team before heading over to the stadium?
Yeah, so it's an 8:00 kickoff tonight, so it's pretty casual sort of morning and early afternoon. We don't want the guys to get too hyped up or too tired. I mean, it's 100 degrees outside. We definitely want them to stay inside the air-conditioned confines of the hotel. So we'll have a meeting in about 20 minutes, so 3:30 p.m., where we'll go over the scouting report for Sacramento. I put together a kind of a written report and a video on their last three games. We'll break them down a little bit. We'll talk about what we want to do as a team. And we'll probably watch some other videos as well while we're in the room, while we have it. So, anything we can do to get our preparation as good as possible before we go over tonight. So following that will be our pregame meal, having it delivered here to the hotel. So we'll have, some chicken and pasta, that sort of thing, at about 4:00. And then the guys will have some time to themselves to kind of prepare and do whatever they need to do. We'll head to the stadium around 6:15. Again, it's an 8:00 kickoff. So after that, we get into treatment for guys who need it, ankles taped, that sort of thing. Get our warm-up in. It won't take very long in this sort of weather, but warm-up. And then kickoff and everything that game entails. It's we're really looking forward to it. I mean, I don't think there's any player here who isn't excited by the fact that we're playing against the USL team. This is the level that these guys really want to reach. Some of the guys on the team have already been there and they want to bounce back, you know. So it's I think it'll be a good experience for us. And if nothing else, we'll get a better idea of this is what it takes to be at that next level. And you know, Sacramento's no slouch, right? So I think it'll be a good test for us as well.
And real quick before we have to wrap up, I wanted to ask Robin a couple more questions about something he was talking about before we started recording regarding maybe a conversation he's going to have or maybe already has had with some people from Sacramento about the funding for the stadium that the game will be held at tonight, and maybe some ideas that he'll be taking back up to Washington with him in regards to how you can help Kitsap Pumas make a little bit more money and fund a, maybe, I don't know, is the goal to fund a new stadium or just renovate what you guys currently play at? Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, an awful lot depends on whether or not I win the lotto. If I do, then all bets are off. We'll do something very different. But I have an opportunity to, I figure as long as I'm here, why not see what I can learn from these guys? And Sacramento has done a pretty heads up job on getting themselves ready for this level of play. Now we have a very small staff. I mean, we have an office manager, and then we have the coaches and a few other people who help out from time to time. So I want to see what their staff looks like, whether or not they're kind of being frivolous with their money, whether or not, because we operate on a very tight budget. I mean, it's just somebody told me once that if they were going to put together a team in the USL Pro, cost $1.5 million, and I ran through the numbers and it didn't look like it needed to be nearly that much. So what it comes down to is the league needs to get smart when it comes to figuring out ways to get travel cheaper. If you could do some kind of a sponsorship with Alaska Airlines or Delta, someone like that, who would fly teams all over the country and be a sponsor from that standpoint. I mean, you put the guys on the 3 a.m. Flight out of here, out of wherever it is you're going, and then if you get the price down, then that saves a lot of money, because travel is a big item in the budget. But the overall, what we're trying to do is figure out what it is we want to do, and then if we can find out from them how they financed the Bonney Field. It was my understanding that they worked out some kind of an arrangement with the with a concession company, and if through the fairgrounds here. So, if that's the case, we play at a fairgrounds that has a number of events. So, how could we steal their thunder and get something done? I think they said something to the effect of it was $2 to $3 million they were able to raise from that. We could do a great job for about a tenth of that. You know, we could turn what we've got into a real deluxe venue. So that would be step number one. And then, okay, so what are they doing in the way of merchandising? What are they doing in the way of advertising? How do they market? Because as we were saying earlier, we're in a kind of a triangle up here in the Northwest, where we're kind of the low man on the totem pole. You've got the Sounders right across the pond, and if that's the case, they get all the publicity. So it costs less to go to one of our games than it does to take the ferry over to a Sounder game. So therefore, from that standpoint, we think, okay, what do we have to do to get these people to come to our games?
I have zero knowledge of probably the conversations that you've had many times of it costs $1.5 million to become a member of USL Pro. And I know, because it was all over the news, that people are paying $100 million to get into MLS. So when you see a number like that, what goes through your head? Do you analyze it just like you did the $1.5 million USL number? Or what's in Robin's head when you see that?
Well, I think if that's the case, if I'm going to spend $100 million on a MLS franchise, I've got to get something out of it. And so what am I going to get out of it? Is it just the personal knowledge that, okay, I'm part of a soccer club? Is that what ultimately what I would love to do? Or would it be better to go over to England and buy a team over there, a third division team, and then see if you could somehow or other bring Americans over there and work them up through the relegation promotion business. So here, as I say, we were talking earlier, the promotion relegation is never going to happen because I cannot imagine us making it up in MLS and New York being relegated to the third division of U.S. soccer because there'd be people jumping out of buildings. And so it's a wonderful opportunity, I feel, that, again, if you could somehow or other raise the bar for us, do something that's really unique in Kitsap, develop players who are from Kitsap who would ultimately play for us, kind of following, as I said before, the Iceland model. If they can do it, there's no reason why we can't. But and our weather is a whole lot better than Iceland. So it's just a weird opportunity. Again, $100 million is way too much money for a soccer franchise, as far as I'm concerned. $1.5 million is probably way too much for a USL Pro. NASL, I don't know what they're charging for that, but from what I'm hearing, and I don't know, maybe you've heard it as well, there are some teams that are having a hard time making it because of all the expenses. If it's costing $1 million a year to run a franchise at this level, you've got to bring in a lot of money. Otherwise, or you've got to have a lot of money that you have, and you need the tax write-off. So I think that probably is the underlying factor for a lot of people who own teams. It's a good write-off. But I would rather not be a non-profit team. I'd rather do it for profit, if at all possible.
Well, Robin, I thank you for your time and sitting down with us. Nobody can see it. I was going to say, as you can see, nobody can see what we're looking at right now. But it's starting to turn into a little hustle and bustle here with getting ready for the meeting with the players and the afternoon meal. I don't want to keep you from that. So, okay. Yeah, is there anything else you'd like to leave listeners with right now, or?
Can't think of anything offhand. I'll probably think of it tomorrow on my way home.
Okay, so maybe we'll follow up with Robin at a later date. Levy already took off, so he waved goodbye before he took off. But yeah, once again, thank you guys for listening, and we will complete this episode with an update of how the game goes this evening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome, Robin.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Summit, 343's live educational networking event for coaches and members of the ambitious soccer community. The Summit will be taking place at the Palms Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, July 29th through 31st, 2016. Please visit 343coaching.fm for more information. Thank you.